Blog Talk Radio.
Chris, I lose my 3-year-old in the store for 10 seconds, and I start to go panic.
I have not seen any of that from you at all.
Help me understand that.
I love those girls. I would never do anything just because I haven't shed a tear.
Don't
look into that. Like, I don't love my kids.
Well, tell me,
explain
to me. You're crying with your wife that you're leaving her.
Yeah.
But you don't cry that your two little baby girls.
I'm hoping they're still around. I'm hoping they're still somewhere.
Yeah, but you don't have them right now. You're not reading stories to them at night.
I know.
You're not giving them midnight snacks. You're not giving them their medicine. You're not waking up with them in the morning.
I know this. Like, I.
So that should cause you pain.
It does cause me pain.
But I don't see that. I want to see the Chris that cares. I want to see the Chris that, you know, feels bad about what he did and wants to, you know, get this off his chest and be done with this. And let us find your little girls so that they're not out there in the middle of a field or whatever somewhere. Like, don't do that.
I love those girls to death.
Then show us that. Show us this Chris.
I'm not showing you that Chris. I'm showing you the Chris that cares about his girls and his wife. Just because I haven't shed a tear, it shouldn't make you feel like I haven't, that the love isn't there for them.
All right, everybody. Welcome to Web Sleuths Radio. My name is Tricia Griffith, and that was part of a very long interview where Chris Watt sat with two Colorado Bureau of Investigation agents. And at the beginning of that soundbite, which was a little bit, overmodulated slightly, basically he is told he failed the polygraph. And that was his reaction. Now, a little bit later, he's going to start singing a different tune, and we'll be talking about those little bits of audio as well. Joining me tonight, I love this panel. They're the best in the world. We have Levi Page from Levi's podcast, Crime and Scandal, also joining us. Little Texans, our wonderful, most loved moderator. And then we have the incredible lawyer, verified lawyer. We all love her on Web Sleuths. A woman that was going to be on our show earlier, like a few weeks ago, but decided it wouldn't be the best thing to do. Wait until the plea bargain or the plea was in, and I thought that was a great idea. Colorado 303. Who actually knew Shanann and was friends with her. Okay, everybody, I'm going to just kind of go round table here. And Colorado 303, let's start with you. Before we get into the actual meat and potatoes of this guilty plea and all of these new audio and video recordings released, tell us about your friend Shanann. What would you say to anybody who wanted to know about her and her kids?
Well, first, let me just say thanks for asking, because there's been so much that has been just, you know, speculated about Shanann. But Shanann was not someone that I'd known for very long. I had just been friends with her for about a year. She's one of those people that her presence sticks with you. She just had such a positive attitude about life. And ironically, one of the most distinctive things about her was she was not judgmental about other people. If you look at her friends, and we had the unfortunate, unique opportunity to be able to do that when you go to like a celebration of life, it was people of, you know, different ages, and you could tell just, you know, some of them were like extremely polished and professional, and others were kind of like more casual and laid back. I'm significantly older than she is, but she cared about everybody and just really believed in everybody's potential and had a way of making you feel good about yourself when you're done talking to her. So knowing that, knowing how much she loved her kids, and she did, she was so devoted to her kids, and she loved Chris too. Seeing the kind of speculation, completely unfounded speculation by people who didn't know her online, was, I think, particularly painful, I know, for me personally, and I can't even imagine how bad it was for her folks.
And that was something that was I found very disappointing. Although I shouldn't be shocked, I am, every time this happens, when a murder victim, is thrown under the bus. And unfortunately, that is what happened here. Now, it certainly wasn't with everybody, but it was a very vocal minority because of the story that Chris told and what reality is. Now, Chris told everybody, in fact, a little bit later on, we're going to hear him confess what happened, but he told investigators that he found Shanann killing the girls after he told her he wanted a trial separation. And he killed her in a blind rage, and then he didn't know what to do. So, you know, you do the logical thing. You take your two beautiful dead daughters, drop them in separate oil tankers. Good Lord, what a lunatic. And then you, bury your wife. See, if he had called the police right after that, no problem. I think he could have gotten away with it. But this bizarre act of going and it's not funny, it's just so weird, putting your daughters in separate oil tankers that had oil in it. I don't get it. Anyway, that is where the difference came online. I think this is a very interesting case to look at the what happens online socially. And when people don't realize how hurtful they're being to another family, there was nothing to suggest that Shanann killed her two daughters. No. In fact, later on, Chris admitted he pleads guilty to killing everybody. And still, there are people out there, and I believe Chris's family is in that group, that will not believe that he killed his daughters and that Shanann was a terrible, horrible person that drove him to kill you, but that's what drove him. In fact, let me see if I can get this one here. Hold on.
What happened to that kid from Pine Forest High School? He met Shanann. That's what happened to him, because that boy, he knew what he wanted to do.
That is Chris's mom. When a reporter said, what happened to Chris? Great kid all the while growing up, and then now he's killed his family. And his mom says, well, what happened to him? Shanann happened to him right there. There is the blame. I'm sorry. I don't care what you've done. You don't get to blame somebody for their own murder because of the way you think they behaved, and there's nothing to back it up. Anyway, I'm sorry. I'm getting on my soapbox. I'll say a word and it'll just get ugly. Let's go to the master himself, the one that knows all, has every detail of every case in that brain, Levi Page. Levi, thoughts? I can only imagine. I can feel the heat of your seething coming through. What is your thoughts up till now?
Well, I agreed with you. I think that the biggest mistake that he made, if he wanted people to actually believe his ridiculous story, was the fact that he didn't call the police. That instead he loaded them up in gas tanks, and he was even caught on video loading it into his truck. The neighbor had a security footage, and they caught him on video. And his story never made sense from the beginning, but we had people, mostly women, I would say, are the people that were big supporters of him that believed in his weird story. And I think the reason that he came up with this story is because his mother did not like Shanann. And he knew that if his mother didn't like her, then maybe there will be other people out there that have a distaste for her and that could believe him. And I think that's why he came up with this story, to paint her as an unlikable person, because there were people in his own family that didn't like her for apparently no reason at all, no logical reason. And it didn't work. It did not work, and I'm glad that he pled guilty. I'm glad that we didn't have a trial where it was dragged on. You know, we could have had a trial 2 years from now. In 2 years, in the news, Shanann would have been dragged through the mud. Her reputation, mm-hmm. People would have been speculating on what a horrible person she was, how she was the cause of all of this. That would have been going on for 2 years. Remember in the Jodi Arias case, she blamed the victim, Travis Alexander, for stabbing him so many times, saying that he was abusive to her. How long did that character assassination go on? So at least Shanann's family is spared that, you know, circus. I'm glad.
Well, and they're. Cool. Oh, go ahead. Who wants to speak? Jump in.
Things,
who is this? Is this Colorado?
It is. I'm sorry. Is that okay?
Yes, yes. Oh, no, go ahead. Just identify yourself for me, because I'm
okay,
clueless.
I'm sorry.
So.
Yeah. This is.
Go ahead.
This is Colorado. When.
surprised me, and I know it surprised a number of other people on the boards, was when you were listening to his interrogation just prior to the confession, one of the things that the investigator actually did was fed him that scenario of Shanann hurting the girls.
Right.
And so I do think that he chose that because he knew that his parents would be able to swallow that, but I'm not even sure if they had not brought that up in the interrogation, if he would have kind of glommed onto it. And it gave him a way, I think, to be able to take some of the pressure off, let him know where the bodies were because he knew they were closing in, without honestly having to step up and admit the kind of monster that he was, you know, and having smothered his girls with his bare hands.
You're absolutely right. And right before the tape that I played, the part of that interview right before that, they tell him, you know, your boss put a GPS on your truck, so we're going to be able to see exactly where you went. They're getting us that information right now. And he says, okay. I don't think he realized that. This is somebody that has no idea how to commit a crime, which is good because at least we can catch them. But the problem is they think they can fool everybody. And if it hadn't been for your friend, Nicole, not the NK, not the one that had the affair, but Colorado, your friend, Nicole, if she hadn't been so persistent in saying Shanann should be here, we're supposed to do this, she's supposed to do that, and calling Chris, and finally calling the police, and then Chris rushes home. If that hadn't happened, I don't think for one second that that Chris would not have been able to get away with this, because he was going to go home after work and clean everything up. Well, he didn't have a chance to do that. Okay, Little Texans, you have been on this case on Web Sleuth day one, minute one. And there are so many twists and turns and shocking and appalling and bizarre stories. I want you, because you know them all, and you have them right there at your fingertips and in that brain of yours. What is one of the most bizarre things that you can tell us about this case?
Well, I think a lot of the things that have come out in discovery have been rather shocking, even though I think a lot of us probably didn't think we could be shocked by too much anymore, especially regarding his family of origin. But when I read the documentation, I believe it's from Sandy Rusick, Shanann's mom, talking about a time couldn't have been too long ago, a year and a half, 2 years ago, where they were all staying in the house in Colorado. Shanann and Chris were away, and both sets of parents were there with the granddaughters. Her parents had been, or I guess granddaughter, I believe she was pregnant with Cece then. And her parents had been there a long time, helping her with the pregnancy, and she had a lot of trouble during that pregnancy. And when his parents swooped in, instead of just being guests, they sort of like secreted Bella upstairs and said, even though we're all in the same house, you can't see her. And I guess, I knew how much, I got the feeling of how much they hated Shanann. I was a little taken aback at how much they hated her parents. And I guess it shouldn't surprise me. I mean, why would they like her parents if they don't like her? Mm-hmm. But just to have that kind of rudeness in someone else's house and to say, well, you can't see her, we're here to visit her. And they're all grandparents. Who does that to a kid, first of all, in front of a kid?
And they're in the same house.
And they're in the same house. And then for Sandy to say, I never spoke to Cindy again. I mean, that, you know, and I can see Sandy is a very decent, loving, forgiving person. So I don't blame her in the slightest. But for her to have been pushed to her limit of, like, I can't deal with this woman, I mean, that's how bad that is. So some of those stories coming out, and I think that I personally think will continue to come out, and I think whoever writes a book about this, the only thing I'm interested in is the family of origin and how far back that goes, how many generations back that goes.
Mm-hmm.
On his side.
I agree.
I think there's going to be so many more incidences, not just of girlfriends of Chris or wives of Chris that they didn't like, but just relationships. Do they even have any friends? Has anybody even come forward to say, I'm related to these people and we either do or don't agree with them or we go to church together or anything? Nothing. I mean, they're the strangest family. And to get into that kind of argument with your in-laws, I can't fathom it.
You broke up just a little bit when you were telling the story at the beginning, and you said that Shanann's parents were there helping, and then Shanann and Chris went on a trip, and then Chris's parents swooped in.
I'm not sure where Shanann and Chris were off the top of my head, but
right.
Just that I know they had been helping her with her pregnancy with Cece. I believe they said they were out there something like 15 months. I don't know if they were continuously out there or if they, you know, kind of tag-teamed, but they were helping her and him, I'm sure, by extension. And then for them, you know, for his parents to come in, kind of like, we're going to come visit for whatever it was. It may not have been that long, but so what? You don't get to hide the kid or the children upstairs in the house while the other grandparents are there. It's so bizarre.
It is. I want everybody to think about this. Now, my parents and my husband's, ex-husband's parents got along great. In fact, I'm still close to his family. I've always said, if I could have divorced my ex and kept the family, it would have been perfect, but oh well. Anyway, they're adults. They all got along. They went on trips together if they had to. I mean, no matter what, because these are your children, you do whatever you have to do to make things okay and smooth, and you're adults, and you should be able to be treated like an adult. Both sets of grandparents are in Shanann and Chris's house, and Chris's mother takes Bella upstairs and shuts her out from everybody and won't let anybody else see her because it's their time. I want everybody to think how weird that is and how awful, and for them to think at any point that that was normal. And then you look at Chris, and I think that answers a lot. This behavior is uncalled for, and it's bizarre, and I think that really does say a lot about who he is and why he became the way he became. Okay. I want to remind everybody, we'd love you to call in. The area code is 713-955-0606. That's 713-955-0606. And let's go to our verified attorney and all-around go-to person that we go to with every single legal issue in the universe, and that is Hatana. Hatana, welcome back again. We love it when you explain things to us. So let me just get your general idea, and then I want to ask you about NK, the other Nicole, but just kind of let us know what you're thinking now.
In general, about everything?
In general, about everything, yes, about this case.
Oh, my gosh, there's so much to unpack with this case. I mean, you know, it's strange, but a lot of things that a lot of us kind of predicted about him, his motivations, and probably his family of origin, a lot of that really kind of came true. It bore itself out. But it's still all so incredibly shocking and unfathomable. You know, you were talking at the very beginning about this video. No, you weren't talking about it. You were talking about the confession. But I was thinking at the very beginning, as the confession was playing or what he was saying was playing, was him watching the video of them, the two little girls, during the, I don't know if it was during the polygraph or sometime during his quote-unquote confession, but the investigators left the room. And all of a sudden he turned on his phone and he was actually watching video of his two little girls there in the police station. And this was after he had killed them and dumped them into these oil vats. He's sitting there watching video. And, you know, when a lot of us saw that in the discovery, it's just astonishing that someone can do that, can be so devoid of emotion that he can actually sit there and look at the babies who he knows he's never going to see alive again, watch them playing, watch them speaking, and show nothing, and pretend that he still just thinks they're missing. I mean, that was astounding. That and the fact that he was lying about things that are so easy to expose as lies. Like, oh, yeah, Saturday night I went out with these friends. We sat the 10th row of this game. And, yes, these are the friends that I went with. This is the time. I mean, he knows that in minutes the authorities can figure out that that's a lie. And so you have to question why, what kind of person would say things like that, knowing how ridiculous it is and how futile the lie is. And it's no wonder I still remember these reporters asking during the press conference. They asked the district attorney and the panel that was there, which included some investigators, they asked, did you ever notice anything that would make you think he has low intellectual disability or some kind of serious mental illness?
Mm-hmm.
Because the behavior is so bizarre. And, I mean, it goes beyond, I don't know, I mean, it goes beyond anything that we've seen in a sense in most criminal cases. Because, you know, a lot of narcissists, antisocial personality disorder people, which would be psychopaths, sociopaths, they do things like this. Those are the people who commit crimes like this the most. But there's a lot of signs beforehand. There's a criminal record. There's a lot of divorces, domestic violence. People know them to have rage issues. You don't see them as the kind of dad who knows exactly what to pack for his two little toddlers, who blows mm-hmm. their noses, gives them baths, feeds them, gives them daily medication, and does a good job at it. I mean, everybody said that this was a devoted and really good father. You don't see them doing things like that. And so it's really confusing for a lot of people. And I think the main thing that I keep thinking about is what is this? What mm-hmm. created this? How, you know, who is this person, and how can we classify it?
Yes.
And you know, he doesn't fit the criteria in the DSM for narcissistic personality disorder or antisocial mm-hmm. personality disorder, apparently. And you know, the thing is that most of us as humans, we want to categorize it. We want to figure it out because it's just so horrifying and it's so scary. And we've got a verified psychologist, I think, on Web Sleuth Stereopticons.
Yes.
And, you know, she said something, she or he, I think it's a she, but said something very interesting that he may just not fit any specific diagnosis.
Mm-hmm.
And then he or she stated that those diagnoses in the DSM 4, 5, whatever, 10 we're on now, they were actually created primarily for billing purposes so that there's a
really?
Category to fit. Yes, I was like gobsmacked by that. I thought that was so interesting and it explains a lot. And
mm-hmm.
so she was kind of saying, I'm just going to call her she, was kind of saying that, you know, those diagnoses may not explain everything in the world, you know, and that he likely fits somewhere in between a lot of different things. But
mm-hmm.
there's just this compelling urge to figure it out because of the terror of it. I mean, it's so scary and so seemingly random. And, you know, I think it is insane. I really
mm-hmm.
do. It's not legally insane, because he knew exactly what he was doing, and he knew that it was wrong, both
mm-hmm.
ethically and legally. So he would not even come close to fitting legal insanity. But I think it's insane.
It's not legal insanity, but it's insane. Maybe, like you said, there needs to be a whole new category, a whole new section, because of these new types of criminals that we're seeing. And I'm with, I think everybody kind of feels this way. We need to look at his childhood and beyond, and his mother's childhood and on, just like with Jackie Peterson. I think we're going to find things that will be shocking, but not the least bit surprising. Okay, Hitana,
yes.
Right now on websleuth.com, the best true crime discussion forum in the universe, if you ask me, the biggest case now is still Shanann's case, even though it's over,
mm-hmm.
it's done.
Yeah.
But we're getting all of this, all these things, document dumps is what we call them, and audio and video and everything that we've been talking about for so long, now we can actually see and hear and read. One of the most polarizing figures in this whole case, I'm just going to refer to her as NK. NK is the woman that Chris Watts was having the affair with. Now, if you get a chance to listen to her interrogation or questioning, if you will, some people thought she came across just horrible, came across very insincere. Other people think she's a victim of Chris. Hatana, I know you have some very strong opinions on this, and I'd like you to tell us about those. Tell us those opinions, because it's interesting to me, very interesting.
Well, you know, at first, when I heard that he had an affair with this woman, I felt that she was a victim of the circumstances, because surely, you know, she couldn't have known that he was going to do this. And, you know, we didn't know at the time whether she even knew what the situation was. Oftentimes somebody will tell an affair what they want to hear. We're divorcing, we're separated. They'll make up stories. And, you know, I'm also, you know, I've been through life and I've seen things happen. And I've seen people that I love and adore and think are good people do things like have affairs.
Right.
I'm not the type who's going to, you know, jump on her just for that. Although some people have pointed out that it can show kind of where you are as a person, you know, especially when combined with other things. And I think it's the other things that really made an impression on me. And, you know, at first when she came out with that article right before sentencing, she came out with an article for those who don't know. It had very kind of film noir photos of her all done up, but in, like, just her face, you know, illuminated in the dark. And mm-hmm. she said lots of things about how he stated, hey, we're at the end of a divorce. She knew nothing about the pregnancy, all these different things. And I was on Web Sleuth saying, oh, yeah, you know, I think that I'm sure that the DA kind of authorized her to release this information now to get ahead of the sentencing because, you know, she really was going to be, besides the friend Nicole, she was going to be mm-hmm. the star witness for this whole thing. I mean, she was really going to be the one to provide that motive that, while legally unnecessary, is one of the most necessary things, really,
right.
in a trial for a jury, you know what I mean? So, you know, I really felt at that point that she was kind of like an Amber Fry type, and mm-hmm. that the district attorney was probably really holding her hand and trying to protect her. And then that changed very quickly with the first document dump, the first discovery that had information from her interviews. When I saw that, she was clearly lying in the article, the interview for the magazine or whatever it was that she gave.
Mm-hmm.
But after that, you know, lots of people saw and put things together that indicated how much she was lying. And one of the biggest issues for me was how she deleted all of the text messages and even computer searches before she contacted the police. She knew what she was doing. She told a friend to delete information from her phone, too, that she'd sent about this guy.
Mm-hmm.
And she searched for, can the police recover these, you know, these text messages or anything like that. And I do have strong opinions about that. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. I do. I think that I fully understand the embarrassment. If that was me, oh, my gosh, you know, that I would be humiliated to think the public is going to see all this sex stuff. They're going to hate me. You know, mm-hmm. this is awful. But you're talking about the lives of two little babies. And I really think that, and this also goes for how Chris Watts' family has conducted themselves throughout this whole thing. These mm-hmm. are the moments in life that determine who we are, period.
Yes.
This is it. We get to choose who we're going to be. And she chose who she wanted to be. And who she wanted to be was a selfish person who felt that she got to decide what was key evidence. She got to decide to eliminate evidence. She got to decide to have interviews on her own terms. And I really dislike that. I dislike that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think she had anything to do with the murders. I don't think she had any knowledge of that. Although I do think that there was a lot of pressure put that she was putting on Chris Watts to kind of, if you love me, you know, you'll do this. If you love me,
right.
you'll do that. And maybe whining about his children. She insists she didn't. It's very clear from her text messages to one of her friends who's a witness in the case that she did not want someone with baggage, quote unquote, and she did not want someone with children. She didn't want to deal with that. And she also said in the interview something to the effect of, well, every time, you know, he had his children around, we couldn't talk, and that bothered me.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I find her to be, and especially after listening to her interview, just the tone, extremely arrogant.
Mm-hmm.
I find her to be a very immature, emotionally immature person that lacks empathy. She's very self-centered. This is about her. I think
mm-hmm.
she would have been the stepmother from hell if those kids had survived. And
mm-hmm.
I do think that her personality and, you know, some of who she was and how she conducted herself was a catalyst. It was a trigger. That's not to say that that was her fault, because
right.
ultimately it's nobody's fault but him. And,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, he's the one with the major defect that caused him to commit murder, you know, planned
right.
murder. But I think that with a person like that, there's always some kind of a trigger, whether the trigger is aware of it or not, or,
mm-hmm.
you know, facilitates that triggering or not. And
exactly.
I do think that she was a trigger for him. Would he have done something like this on another occasion, a different circumstance? Yeah, I think he could have. But
mm-hmm.
but in this case, this was the trigger. And, you know, I just wish that she had shown more solemnity and horror about that.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Instead of being more concerned about herself. I just,
mm-hmm.
you know, I think it comes down to character, and that's how I feel about that. I do feel strongly. Yeah.
And we're talking, let me just do a little bit of catching up here for those who've just tuned in. My name is Tricia Griffith. This is Web Sleuth Radio, based on websleuth.com, a true crime discussion forum on the internet. And with us today, I'm very thrilled to have all Web Sleuth members. Every single one of them are members of Web Sleuth, and we love and appreciate all of their work and participation. We have, you just heard Hatana One, she's a very And we have Levi Page. Levi hosts his own podcast, Crime and Scandal. He's also a member. We have Colorado 303. Not only is she a member, but Colorado was also a friend of Shanann's. And finally, one of the main people who run tonight, our incredible moderator, Little Texans. I want to go to you, Colorado 303, because we've talked a little bit about this. And I asked you off the air, I said, what is with this white hot anger? I understand it. I do. But, and I understand why people were upset with Amber Fry, but this is different than Amber Fry. This feels different. The anger and the outright hatred and the wishing of terrible things on NK really surprises me. Tell us why you think everybody dislikes her and is angry with her. And you are too, I believe.
Sure. And I think one of the assumptions people have when they hear about folks that are perhaps judging her, judging NK, I don't like her, why'd she do it, questioning her character, they believe it either has to do with the fact that she was a mistress and was dating someone who was married and had kids and had a wife that was pregnant, or she also had the misfortune of having some pretty colorful texts and web searches
mm-hmm.
unveiled during the discovery process. Some things that I think some people would consider to be really risque and maybe kind of tawdry. Those things, I'm sure some people reacted, you know, poorly to those, but
mm-hmm.
and especially someone like me who's friends with Shanann, right, because this woman was actually cheating on a friend of mine
mm-hmm.
with her husband.
Mm.
That actually wasn't the reason. The people that were really, really mad, as a matter of fact, I think that you'll find, especially among the web sleuth community, it's a bunch
mm-hmm.
of open-minded people. The vast majority of the people that are upset with her are not upset with any of the choices she made about who to date or what to do in her personal time. It has to do with the fact that after the crime, how she acted, and her behavior was so self-serving. In her interview that they actually published clips of it on television prior to the sentencing, I was like, you go, girl. You know, I still wasn't going to be her best friend. I didn't appreciate the fact that she had been sleeping with a friend's husband. But I can certainly understand how the wool could be pulled over somebody's eyes. When I read the discovery, like Katana said, there were things in there that were directly inconsistent with things that she had said. And they show web searches. She had been searching for Shanann as far back as September or October of last year. The things that she had been able to see on Shanann's Facebook definitely spoke to the fact that they were still married, that she was still pregnant. So she lied to law enforcement. Don't appreciate that. There are two things that kind of pushed me, one to the edge and the other over at the edge. The thing that pushed me to the edge was she told law enforcement that after the first day, by the second day, she thought that they had killed them all, or that he had killed them all. Not she didn't believe his story. She believed he killed the girls and Shanann, yet she destroyed evidence. And that means that she was willing to risk him not being punished for killing, you know, three, four innocent souls for the sake of her own reputation. And I think Katana said it so well, I couldn't say it better. It really speaks to, it's moments like that say, what kind of a person are you? And I came across thinking, okay, you know what, you're a self-serving coward is what you are. Then I saw that she had searched for Amber Fry, who was Scott Peterson's mistress, if you will. And not only did she search for him, she searched for her book deal. She searched for her net worth. And this was within days of him being arrested. So she's already wrapping her mind around, gee, how can I profit this? And that's the thing that tossed me right over to the other side of the fence, where, you know what, you're going to have a hard time saying anything pleasant about this person that I'm going to be nodding my head in agreement with.
I think you're absolutely right. That did it for a lot of people. We're going to go to Levi Page and then Little Texans, and then we'll be taking your phone calls. So feel free to call in, area code 713-955-06. Crime and Scandal, soon to be co-hosting with me on a brand new, incredible podcast that will start in January. Levi, you've been hearing us go on and on about NK. I'm curious to hear your thoughts because, again, this is different than Amber Fry, and I want to bring something up that we just kind of touched on a bit. She claimed that NK claimed that she and Chris were doing, were having an affair. Just for a few months, when in reality, she had searched Shanann's name like a year before. That, to me, is very telling and very disturbing, just one of the many things. But does she deserve this attack on social media? Here's the deal. Unfortunately, that's the way life is now. And if you behave a certain way and you're caught and it's on social media, it's hell to pay for. It really, really is. But Levi Page, in all your wisdom, tell me what you think.
Well, I think there's a juxtaposition with Amber Fry because, remember, she cooperated with police and even secretly recorded Scott Peterson without his permission and was working with the police to get Scott Peterson and get incriminating evidence against him that was going to be used in court. And a lot of the evidence that Amber Fry gathered against Scott Peterson when she secretly recorded him was used to convict him. Because remember, he was on the phone with Amber Fry claiming that he was in Paris and was in Europe, when in reality he was at a vigil for his missing wife, and he's on the phone with his mistress claiming that he's in Europe. And people found that behavior extremely bizarre, that your wife is missing, she's pregnant with your child, your son Connor, and you're on the phone with a mistress lying to her and pretending that everything is just fine. And that is the hallmark of a true psychopath. And the jury got to see just how psychopathic Scott Peterson was via those recordings. And then you have this mistress who was more concerned about her reputation than she was actually helping law enforcement in this case. So I think that it is two different scenarios. I don't think that she can be compared to Amber Fry at all. And the fact that she was searching for Amber Fry's book deal and net worth all the while, mm-hmm. you know, telling people to delete things and she's deleting things. I mean, that's weird. I mean, if you're going to write a book, you need to tell the entire truth and instead of worrying about how you'll look in the public or in the media. And that's what she seemed to mostly be concerned with, was her appearance in the media. How is she going to be portrayed? How are people going to view her? Are they going to view her as a victim? Are they going to be sympathetic towards her? She wasn't mm-hmm. really concerned that there were dead children, a dead woman, that were brutally snuffed out in the most evil way. And she was more concerned with herself. And I think that she played her cards wrong. I think she played her cards right. wrong. And mm-hmm. there's not going to be a book deal.
Mm-mm.
There's not going to be a TV deal. Her net worth is not going to go up because guess what? We've seen enough mistresses. I mean, I don't mean to sound callous, but you know, we've seen so many since Scott Peterson that really I don't think it's a story that people that are into true crime are interested in anymore.
No. I mean,
we've
unless
been
the
there,
mistress
we've done
has,
that.
Yeah.
We've closed the chapter.
Exactly. And unless the mistress has three heads and nine legs or something bizarre, it's the same story, unfortunately. It really is. Thank you, Levi. And now I'm going to go to the woman who has seen the change in the feeling that people have for NK on our forum, Little Texans. Little Texans is basically in charge of Shanann's discussion thread. And Little Texans, you and I have talked about this quite a bit. But, in the beginning, just like Hitana said, and Colorado, and it was kind of like, okay, yeah, we see. And then you start hearing these little bits and pieces until the whole story changes and people's opinions change. Tell us about your experience on Web Sleuths and what you think personally about this.
Well, I don't really have a lot to add to what other people have already said about her character. Obviously, it's bad. But I also don't have proof, I guess any more than anyone else does, that she knew he was going to commit a quadruple homicide any more than in this case. I will make one small comparison to Amber Fry, because she was so pre-Facebook, pre-social media. I mean, that happened, what, 2002?
Right.
So the one similarity I have mentioned to Tricia, and I don't think too many people agree with it, but I see it, and it's not about them as their character, certainly,
mm-hmm.
is that when I look at it not from the standpoint of the mistress, but I look at it from the standpoint of the family annihilator, I think both women were triggers.
Yes.
So I yeah. see that similarity.
Yeah.
Just because mm-hmm. Amber didn't know she was, I get it.
Mm-hmm.
She's a much better human being. And she didn't mm-hmm. go into this trying to date a married man. She was told Lacey was gone. She was told, you know, and she took that to mean dead.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if that were to happen now, I wonder how many people would say, well, why didn't she Google the obituary? Well, why wasn't she looking to figure out where his dead wife, you know, was buried or something?
Mm-hmm.
Well, we didn't do that in 2002. People
no,
just ask those questions. So, again, I definitely think Amber deserves all the money she got from her book deal and all of that, and this
yes.
woman to just crawl away into a hole somewhere. But I do think when I look at it from the standpoint of the man, he knew, both of those men knew they were married and still had a kid on the way or children already, whether or not their mistress did. Obviously, in this case, NK has made very terrible choices and comes
mm-hmm.
across really bad in that interview, about 99% of it. You know, I hope that she wasn't involved and that the DA did not really miss something here, because I have been concerned about that since the discovery came out. Why aren't they charging her with lying to
mm-hmm.
the police? People say it's small potatoes and that it's like, you know, Cindy Anthony. We all know she perjured herself. Yes, but Cindy Anthony was also really a victim. This woman
right.
really not. So, you know, I am concerned, but apparently they don't have evidence. what, despite what she wiped, deleted, destroyed, whatever, that, you know, they don't have evidence that could really nail her for knowing this was going to happen or for even encouraging it to happen.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I don't want to hear about her again. I'm very, very tired of hearing about her.
Right.
I think that people can take heart and that I personally believe her reputation is destroyed. So I
mm-hmm.
think that's been done. And I think the only thing she could do now is just, as I said, slink away somewhere, change her name, and never speak in public again.
Yeah, I think, I hope she does take that advice. I think that's the way she'll be able to have a good life after this. And I hope to high heaven that she's learned a few things, especially when it comes to men who say, I am getting a divorce, I promise. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, this becomes the most dangerous part of the show. Do keep in mind, we may get hurt. I'm going to go to the phones, okay? I'm going to go to the phones, see who's there. This poor person has been waiting online for almost a half hour, and I believe this person is actually using Skype. So if you're using Skype or somehow have blocked out your number and it's just 111-111-111, you're on the air. Hello? Are you there, Skype caller? Maybe not a Skype caller, but you've been able to disguise your number, and it says you have a question. Area code 111-111-1111. Hello? Are you there? How about everybody on hold say something, and then I'll be able to hear the person. Hello?
Something.
Oh, I heard breathing.
Colorado.
Oh, there, it's you. Who was that? So who said something?
That was me. Actually, I thought you wanted the people that were on the panel to say something. It's Colorado.
I'm sorry. You know what? I am so sorry. I should give you the instruction pamphlet before the show on how it works and the edits that we need to do. Okay, well, I'm going to put this person back on hold and then try to get to them later, but they have been holding for almost a half hour, so sorry about that. Okay, let's try another phone call here, and we're going to go to area code 603. You're live on the air. How are you?
Hi, I'm K2, and I've been watching WebSleuth since the beginning. I'm nervous. I've never done this before. I have a question that I haven't seen anywhere else, and that is why he actually took the polygraph.
Mm-hmm.
What would possess him to go in and lie? He didn't have to take the polygraph, and I heard a defense attorney saying that after the plea that it was a winnable case. So I'm wondering, if he hadn't taken the polygraph, I can't imagine they ever would have found the babies.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any idea what could have caused him to make that decision to take that polygraph?
I'd like to jump in, and then I'll let the panel answer. I think he had no idea what he was doing, and he thought he'd be able to fool it. In his mind, this is just how you do it. I think he's really got something socially wrong with him. And K2, I don't think he had any inkling that he was going to be caught lying on the polygraph. That's just my opinion. Let's go to Colorado 303. Your thoughts. Have you ever met Chris, Colorado? You haven't, have you? You just know what Shanana's told you.
I've met him. I didn't know him well. I just met him enough to be able to have memories of, you know, having sat at the same table with him and maybe talked to him a little bit. But by no means did I know him personally. I knew him probably more through her, and not even that much. But I think it's a great question. And
it is a great question.
Really, when you were asking Little Texans what surprised her the most, what surprised me the most is some of the, like, just incredible, incredible lies and untruths he told that were completely unnecessary and so easy to prove wrong. Like, when in his first interview, he literally lied. It was going to be Bella's first day of school. And he said that her first day of school wasn't until the next Monday. Why would you do that? I mean, he had called the school that morning to unenroll them and say they weren't going to be coming in. He had to know that that was going to come out, just like he had to know that he was going to fail the lie detector. Why did he let the cops wander through his house? Has he never, ever seen a single crime TV show that says get a damn attorney before you talk to the police? There were so many things. I remember all of us believed that had been following the crime that when they found the girls that they were going to have been strangled, because why in the world would he say that they had a different cause of death than the cause of death that would show up in autopsy? When he said that Shanann had strangled them, we figured, okay, he had done it. He had strangled them, but we never thought he had smothered them. Why would you lie about that? He set himself up.
True.
You know, I think that, and you know, Nicole Atkinson, the friend that actually called the police, not NK, his mistress, she really did do an amazing job of foiling his plan.
Yes.
But for her, I think we probably would have gone to a much longer trial. But I do think he made enough boneheaded decisions of his own that even if he had gotten to go along with whatever his nefarious plan was, it was going to be exposed, and law enforcement probably would have caught him. It just would have been a whole lot more painful for all the parties involved.
Exactly. And I, like I said, I just think he thought that he would never get caught. And then when Nicole insisted on calling the police, that messed up his whole plan, and he didn't have a backup plan. He didn't have plan B. So I think he was just winging it. And I need to apologize. There's snoring in the background. I swear I don't have like a guy here like tied up or anything. It's my dog. She had surgery a couple of days ago and she snores, and I don't have the heart to make her get off the couch. Anyway, I do apologize. And K2, I'm going to ask our other people here what they think about your question, which by the way is excellent. And Little Texans, why don't you take this one on?
Yeah, Chris really didn't do anything that would be considered logical. I think from the moment he concocted this crime in his head, and I personally do think he planned it, but you know, planned is a loose term because he obviously did a very bad job of planning it. I think he was foiled at every step. I think Shanann getting in late from that flight that night threw off his plans. Yeah, then he calls the school the next day and not only unenrolls them, but then says something like, "Are they there?" Which is bizarre. So I don't know what that was. He totally didn't take into account that his neighbors had cameras outside and maybe they'd see his truck going by at the very least. I mean, even if you didn't know, they could actually, it was actually angled to where you could see him going into his garage. You'd think, I mean, if you've watched any crime ever on TV or read a book, that the neighbor's camera might pick you up at least driving by at, you know, 2 a.m, 5 a.m, whatever.
Sure. But he knew they had cameras because his truck had been broken in. He had actually used their video before to try and get information.
That makes it
worse. Even weirder.
Yeah.
So even weirder. So, going to your own work site, again, I don't know about finding the girls in the tanks because they were going to be decommissioned or whatever and they may have broken down over time, but he only put like 8 inches of dirt over Shanann's body. Did he really think somebody wasn't going to notice that? I mean, people were going to go out there or an animal was going to drag her out of the grave or something. I mean, that was, you drive your work truck to your work site. That's not smart.
With a GPS.
And then I think I said to you early on, Trisha, if you're going to do that, then you need to pin it on a coworker if he turns up at your, what you need to say, you had like some crazy coworker, she had a crazy stalker, and that's the only way she could have wound up on Anadarko property because you obviously didn't do it. Why would you do that? That's a very dumb thing to do, bury your dead family at your own work site.
Right.
But I don't know. His IQ cannot be very high is all I can really imagine. And I don't know, maybe he wanted to get caught. I mean, it sounds like he's doing really well in jail. Maybe he wanted to get caught.
That's what I thought. Now, can I just play armchair psychologist since it's my show and I'll hang up on anybody that disagrees? Okay, thanks. Here's what I think. I think his whole childhood, he was not allowed to be a human being. I think Mama Chris just, you know, and he had to be a certain way and act a certain way, and she made the decisions for him. You know, what extracurricular activities he would do if he did anything. It was just a constant. So he marries Shanann. there's already friction. They don't even show up to the wedding, all right? And you have Mama Chris going, you know, I can't stand her. And even Mama Chris calls, or Mom, excuse me, Mama Cindy, even Mama Cindy calls one of Chris's friends and starts bitching about Shanann. And that friend called Chris back and said, Chris, you gotta stop this. So from the moment he became serious about Shanann, Mama Cindy was just yapping in his ear about what a terrible person she was. And then he starts having this affair with this woman, and, you know, she's saying, hey, I don't want kids, and, you know, when is this going to happen? We don't know really how much pressure she put on him, how much pressure NK put on Chris. But maybe both sides. He's got his mom, NK, I want to get married. Shanann, what are you doing? We want to have this baby. Just all of this in his brain, and he thinks, okay, I'll take care of it, and I don't care if I get caught. I'm wondering if it's almost something like that. It's like, this will please everybody except for Shanann and the girls, but he'll have his mom off his back. He can have his girlfriend, and if he gets caught, what the hell? I think he, in a sense, was emotionally just, the life was sucked out of him by, in my opinion, his mother. It really was. I don't think Shanann in any way, shape, or form should take any responsibility for how he felt about stuff. She loved him, and it was apparent she loved him. But, you know, when you've got this mom who does bizarre things like keep the grandbaby away from the other grandparents, even though they're in the same house, and then you have a mistress who thinks that you're getting a divorce right away, and that puts all kind of pressure on him. That's just my armchair opinion. And let's go to Levi, then we'll go to Hitana. Levi, your thoughts on why Chris took a polygraph. Levi Page, where did you go? Levi?
I think you took a... Can you hear me?
I can hear. I didn't touch anything, I swear to God. Go ahead.
Okay. I was talking and nobody was responding. Okay, so I think that he took a polygraph because he really thought that he could pass the polygraph. I think that his parents are used to believing him, so he thinks everyone else is going to believe him, just like his mother didn't like Shanann, so he thought if he blamed Shanann, he could pull one over on her, he could pull one over on everyone else. And I think that's why he thought that he could pass a polygraph. It's delusional. I think it comes from the way that he was raised by his parents. And I think that we see that with a lot of people. Their parents, you know, tell them that they're, you know, the best thing since, you know, ice cream, that they're the best invention since the cell phone, and they believe it. And when people tell them otherwise, they're really offended. They're, you know, befuddled. They don't understand. And I think that his raising has a lot to do with it.
I do too. And that's why I'm really hoping that somebody with the right credentials will write a book about his childhood. And Hitana, final word on this topic. What do you think caused him to take this polygraph that he would obviously fail terribly?
Well, I mean, like I think it was either Colorado or Little Texans was talking about, just all these bizarre things that he did that, as Levi described, were just almost delusional. You know, I think that here was this emotionless person really living someone else's life, because he, you know, he didn't have much real feeling with his wife, with his children. Nothing really gave him that much pleasure because there was not much authentic identity about him. But
right.
I think he was capable of obsessive lust. I think we see that in Shanann's account of how they met. You know, there's some things on social media that she wrote about how he really aggressively pursued her, and a lot of people who are familiar with kind of narcissists and sociopathic type people, they use the phrase love bombing, that they're really good at that, just bombarding the person with just, you know. And I think some of that stems from they just have this obsessive feeling about the person. And probably because it's the first time, it's like one of the only times that they actually feel something at all. And so they're just, you know, and I think that it kind of created this relentless compulsion in him that really drove out all reason. He was obsessed, and I think he was frantic not to lose this woman. But I do think that he planned it. I think I agree that he didn't plan it well. I think I also totally agree that the change in flight really messed up his plans.
Mm-hmm.
And after that, it was just this kind of cascade of dominoes that he couldn't control the outcome. He couldn't control the timing. He couldn't control that Nicole came. All
mm-hmm.
these things, you know, he couldn't control that the house wasn't staged. And I think that, you know, by the time he got to when the police first came in the door, I mean, we've got this amazing footage that we never had in the past, you know, that we have
mm-hmm.
now, the body cam footage of him coming to the house. The police are already there, and
mm-hmm.
Her friend Nicole is there with her own son. It said, shook hands with the police, and then you see his truck pull up. He gets out. He hot foots it up there. He's running. You know, it's the one time you really see, one of the only times you see emotion during this whole thing. And you can
mm-hmm.
see the police already, I think, had an inkling because they were they were right behind him. Well, can we come with you? And
mm-hmm.
all along from the beginning, this kind of really set the pattern for him. He, oh, sure. Yes, you can. Because I think what he was motivated by throughout the entire investigation from that very beginning was, what would an innocent person do? Well, an innocent person wouldn't say, no, you can't come in the house. I need an attorney.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm trying to pretend that my wife is missing, not that I might have done something. So if I'm going to pretend that, I'm not going to say, no, you can't come in the house. Yeah, I've got a pregnant missing wife and two missing little children, but I don't want the police to come in.
Well,
I don't
yeah.
want them involved. You know, I think that would have, you know, in his mind and truly created an extreme red flag. So from the beginning, that's how he was, you know, sort of looking at everything. When it
mm-hmm.
came to the polygraph, I agree with everyone who said that he kind of delusionally felt that he might pass it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's because, you know, I do agree that his childhood, and I think it's a combination of his parents, I don't think it's just mom, but I do think that he learned manipulation. I've talked about this before. It's my own kind of cobbled together, you know, non-professional psychological theory of,
mm-hmm.
of who he is. But basically, I see him as a person whose mother and father were very enmeshed with him.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't view him as an independent person. Like you said, you know, decisions were made for him. He was a good
mm-hmm.
little soldier. He was a good boy.
Yes.
He did what he was supposed to do. And while I think that there were severe consequences in the form of a deep kind of maternal rejection, paternal rejection, if he didn't mirror their feelings,
mm-hmm.
if he didn't do what he want what they wanted him to do, if he had an opinion about anything, and it kind of that paralyzes a child. I think we saw that a lot with Casey Anthony. It paralyzes
yeah.
and Scott Peterson. It paralyzes a child because they don't know how to act or what to say
mm-hmm.
That won't get them into this kind of trouble, to get this rejection and disappointment. And so I think they just shut down, right?
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, the kind of parent who is fully enmeshed with their kid, because they don't view the child as independent or having their own boundaries, when the kid goes out in the world and actually does something, expresses themselves as children are wont to do, you know, they go out
mm-hmm.
there and they do something bad, the instinct of the enmeshed parent is to immediately deny, oh, no, not my child. And
my
we've
child
talked about this
that.
On prior.
Yes,
mm-hmm. we've talked about this on prior podcasts. So the kid sees and hears that, and the child quickly learns that all I have to do is deny, and mom will accept it. And because the parent views the child really as themselves, so
mm-hmm.
they wouldn't do anything wrong, because the parent's often a narcissist of some sort or whatever, so
right.
they can't accept responsibility for anything.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, the child, which is an extension of themselves, likewise
mm-hmm.
couldn't do anything wrong. So the kid learns this. So you've got
yes.
this kind of dangerous, really dangerous combination of a child that doesn't really have an identity. They're sort of empty and emotionless
mm-hmm.
and manipulative.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the one key thing about this guy, which kind of motivates so much, including why he confessed, why he did the polygraph, why he pled guilty, all of it, was his deep fear of being unmasked. His need to be perfect and to not disappoint mommy and daddy was so great that he couldn't just get a divorce. He chose death for his entire family. He couldn't get a divorce.
Absolutely agree.
And yes, he had to, you know, he had to kill them instead. And combined with that ability to manipulate, he felt he was going to get away with it. So even though the polygrapher was sitting there saying, we are going to tell if you're lying. We'll be able to tell that. There's no doubt. You sure you want to take this? Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. It's like this combination of desperately wanting to be seen as the good little soldier, the good boy, the perfect person, and the delusion that he's going to get away with it because he's been manipulative all his life. And I think that's why he did it.
I think everybody is right on, and I think that there is that much that goes into Chris Watts because of his upbringing and just because of who he became and how he became who he is, if that makes sense. And Kay, did we answer your question, I hope?
Oh, thank you. Yes. Yes, thank you.
I'm sorry. Your name isn't NK. I'm sorry. That's the mistress.
That's
whoops.
Okay.
K2. There we go. No, I don't want anybody to think NK's here. I'm sorry, what, honey?
No. It just was fascinating. And the part I picked up on, everybody's was great, that he was thinking what an innocent person would do. So he was pretending and thinking, what would an innocent person do? And that made the most sense to me.
Yes.
I could see that going through his head. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you, and call anytime. We are now one of the gold letter callers because you didn't swear at me and wish me death. So thank you. I do appreciate it. Take care, my dear. Okay, see you on the forum. Okay, bye-bye, hon. Okay, let's see. I'll tell you what. Here's the thing. The discussion about Chris and Shanann's death, Chris's admit to killing his wife and his two daughters, it's going to go on for a long time on Web Sleuths. Just like Casey Anthony, just like Scott Peterson. Casey Anthony, they're still discussing. They still have a Travis Alexander thread, I think, that is open, or at least somewhat open. It will not go away. Why? Because it's so polarizing. Because you still have two sides. Even though he pleaded guilty and he said he killed all three people, there are people out there, including especially his family, are going to say Shanann drove him to it and he should have gone to trial because he would have gotten off because it was almost self-defense. I can just hear it. So we're going to have those people. We're going to have trolls come in who specifically try and upset the discussion and try and get it to either go away or go in their direction. We may even have trolls that have been hired by somebody. I'm not saying who. I don't know who would hire them, but it happened before. It's one of those cases that's not going to go away. You're going to see a lot of books. I would recommend buying a book either from an established true crime author or an established psychiatrist, because I think the psychiatric look into the lives of the Watts family is what's desperately needed here. I'm going to go around one more time. Everybody can have their final thoughts. And let's start with Little Texans. Little Texan, final thought for the night.
Well, I will continue to monitor the threads as best we can. I agree with you. This is going to remain a hot case, especially while documents are still being released and reviewed by members. It is solved, so I think we can take some solace in that. I also take a lot of solace in the fact that Shanann's family slapped Chris with a wrongful death lawsuit. So
yes.
I think that if there's anybody else they can slap one on, I hope they do. But it appears that this case has been solved and that they have, you know, the right legal actions in place. And hopefully people who've never seen one of these cases before, perhaps, have gotten some insight into, unfortunately, there's people out there right now being raised in toxic environments and in enmeshed families. They're not all going to grow up to be family annihilators, but
no.
Somebody will. Some of them will. And that there are some red flags that you can look for. So there are still things to be learned, and we'll just continue to monitor the threads and see how things go in the years to come. And hopefully Shanann's family and friends will find peace and be able to have some sort of happy memories, I think, in the future, and something maybe in the girl's name, something like that, and Nico's, that
yes.
can kind of let their legacy live on in a happy way, so that in years to come we don't just talk about how they got murdered, but we talk about the way they lived their lives.
That's absolutely perfect. Thank you so much, Little Texans. And thank you for all the work you do on Web Sleuths. Web Sleuths would be a mess without you, and I really appreciate it. Let's go to Levi Page. Levi Page, your final thoughts, please.
Trisha, I think that this is not over for a lot of people. I think that there are people on Web Sleuths and people that are listening to this podcast that are into true crime because they really want to see justice served. And then I think there's the darker side of the true crime community that has a fascination with people like Chris Watts, Scott Peterson, and other murderers, and that they give attention to those killers. They enable those killers to continue to be delusional. They write them love letters in prison. They send them money. And I think that there are a group of women, and I think it's larger than we are aware of, that send these people letters, that send them money, that he'll be getting marriage proposals. I'm sure that he's already gotten a load of them. We've seen that in the document dump, and I think it's not over for them. I think there's probably going to be somebody creating a website as we speak to raise money for Chris Watts to defend himself against Shanann's parents in that wrongful death lawsuit. Somebody's going to be doing it, and I think that's the sad part of our society, is people that leech onto these killers and for nefarious reasons. And I was talking to an investigator one time who works on post-conviction cases for people once they've been convicted and they're challenging their conviction on appeal. And she says that in one case, this person was up for the death penalty and he had a family, including small children, that were going to see him before he was executed, but he had a woman that never knew him before the murders that married him while he was behind bars, that took the time away from his children to see him before he was executed.
Terrible.
There are women like that in our society, and I think that that is, you know, part of me finds it fascinating, like, how do you become so crazy to get to that point? And I think it's enabling these killers to continue to not own up to what they've done, to continue to waste taxpayer money, continue to drag victims through the mud. And I think that's the unfortunate part of this case. And I think from the document dumps and by the way trolls have been acting online, that we're seeing how this all plays out in a way that we've never seen before, where people are more vocal now than they used to be. People used to, you know, keep their crazy under wraps because they would be embarrassed by it. But now we see on social media, people just let it all hang out, and we've seen the trolls all over Twitter, all over Facebook, just be awful in this case and be awful to the victims. And I think that they're not going to change.
I think you're right, Levi. It's still the wild, wild west on the internet. Levi Page, host of Crime and Scandal. Thank you so much, Levi. We'll have you on again real
soon. Thank you, Trisha. Thank you.
You're welcome. And Hetana, and then we'll go to Colorado for the final thoughts. Hetana, your final thoughts, please.
Yes. Oh, my gosh. When he was talking about these people, these women who write to murderers, we've already seen, and you can find the people keep asking, and I know I was looking myself. You can find some of the discovery dumps. We've got a really good web sleuther named Pommy Mommy who,
she
is diligent about updating the media thread. And for this case, the media thread is found in the located person section. And then you, when you click on that, you go to the media thread, and you'll be able to find where the documents are linked, the discovery is linked. And you can see in that these letters. He's already received tons of letters. And I haven't really looked deeply at all the discovery, but I happened to look at some of that today as I was trying to find something else. And it is scary. These people are disturbed. You know,
yes.
they're writing in from as far away as Australia and as close as Colorado, and they're just, you know, I'm so drawn to you, and here's my picture, and, you know, please, why haven't you answered me back? And just desperate to form some kind of connection with him. It is creepy. It is creepy. Another thing that I wanted to say in closing was, you know, we talk about these red flags. So many of us are invested in these cases because we want to know how, why, and how do you prevent something like this?
Yeah.
And I think, you know, I did a post with what I cobbled together of red flags just following this case and others.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them I think, and this is from learning from others, okay, this isn't my own own expertise, just learning from others, including people who don't necessarily have a professional psych background but who've been through it, and they really educated me on things like love bombing and what it is to, you know, be married to a narcissist or whatever. There's a lot of people on the thread with experience. And I think that two things really stand out if you're in a relationship or going to have a relationship, and those are if it's too good to be true.
Mm-hmm.
If it's too good to be true at first, then this person just, you know, they're doing this whole love bombing thing and they seem so perfect. Well, why aren't they married? You know, why haven't they had a significant long-term relationship? If they haven't and it seems too good to be true, that's a huge red flag. Also combined with family dysfunction, but not just family dysfunction, but the person that you're interested in doesn't really seem to have a deep self-awareness about it and has not created boundaries. Because, you know, he should have set those boundaries for himself with Shanann from the beginning and said, look, if my family is going to be insane enough not to come to the wedding, they're out of my life.
Yeah,
you know, we're going to have minimal contact.
Right.
Yeah, and the fact that he didn't, that's, you know, a red flag. And I'm sure there were others in the beginning that pointed to this level of enmeshment, even though ultimately he did move. But, you know, I think those are some red flags. But, you know, what I like to end on with these podcasts is always something positive when it comes to this case. And, you know, if we go back to something that's not so positive, this example of Chris Watts's family, and I think we started the program out, we were talking about how the parents were there in Colorado, both sets of grandparents, and Cindy and Ronnie basically stated to the paternal grandparents, you can't see Bella, you know, you kept her upstairs. And I think the excuse when asked why this happened, the excuse Cindy gave was, well, then what am I here for? If I'm not here to care for them, what am I here for?
You know, right.
It doesn't make any sense. But what strikes me about that whole little gruesome vignette is the following, that if that indeed happened when Shanann was pregnant with Cece, afterwards, there is a video on Shanann's Facebook of Cindy Watts coming to Colorado after Bella and Cece, they're already bigger girls, you know, they're not infants anymore. And she's expressing love and, you know, kissing them. And, oh, it's a video of her at the airport. And a comment at the bottom of that video was from Sandy Rusek, Shanann's mother. And her comment was one word, and it was, beautiful. That's what she said. So even though she has this very combative, you know, person in her life or in her daughter's life who she knows snubbed her daughter at the wedding, I'm sure she knew all those things, she still had the class and the dignity and the desire to reach out to that other side of the family and express that it was a beautiful moment. And
that says
again,
a lot about
you know,
her.
It does. It says a lot about her, and it comes back, you know, to in the midst of all of this horror, you know, we can look at Shanann and her family as really a shining example of beauty in all of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yes,
they,
absolutely.
From beginning to end, these people have acted honorably. Even after that, even after the horrible things that they said about Shanann on the air, these people continue to express compassion for his family. I mean,
mm-hmm.
Frankie Rusek said at sentencing that his family continues to pray for them, and then they are victims. And that says everything. And I think
right.
those are the things that we have to hold on to in the midst of this horror as true examples of what humanity really is.
There is good out there as well as evil. Okay. Soon, and I do appreciate all your participation on Web Sleuths. You take care, okay?
Yes.
Oh, are you there? Did you hang
yes,
up?
Yes.
Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't hear what you said. Anyway, thank you very, very much for everything. I do appreciate it. You take care, okay?
Thank you. You too.
You bet. Bye-bye. And now we're going to wrap it up with a friend of Shanann's, someone whose life has been truly affected by this horrific act of one person. And that is Colorado 303. Colorado, final thoughts on everything.
Well, thanks. I came to this discussion and really the boards from a completely different place from most people because while I like, you know, crime shows on TV and stuff, I really haven't studied it. But I became really hungry for information about the case and was super happy to find Web Sleuths because even though we did have, you know, some, you know, potentially controversial comments made about Shanann, it still was the most factual site that
Thank
I could
you.
Find with intelligent people talking about things. And
Thank you.
The thing I want to leave people with is that these are real people. All the people that we're talking about are real people. And it's super easy to kind of speculate on the lives of somebody and forget that. And
yes.
I have seen some amazing like acts of like humanity and warmth and courage throughout this whole thing. I questioned myself a lot if I had been in the same situation Nicole had been in, would I have had the balls to pick up the phone and call the police?
Uh-huh.
And I don't know
right.
if I would have because I wouldn't have wanted to make Chris mad or you
right.
know what I mean? And
exactly.
she just didn't care. She was worried and you know, good for her. Good
yeah.
for the neighbor for coming out and I mean he paid a price. His house was on the market. He had to pull his house off the market. They had a new house that they were under contract to buy, that was a custom house and they weren't able to do that because there were news trucks in front of their house and a bunch of looky loos were coming.
Talking about Mr. Thayer?
No, actually, oh. this is Nate, the guy who had the video of the truck.
Oh, right, right, the security video. Right, okay, right, right. Oh, that's too bad. I did not know that. That's awful.
There are just a lot of people whose lives are touched that you don't think about. I'd never
uh-huh.
been involved in anything like this. And so the onslaught of media for people that are involved. So the next door neighbor, you know, Nicole, after she called the police, the Sayers. I mean, their voicemail boxes were literally, you know, full. They couldn't, their
uh-huh.
friends couldn't get through. In
right.
some cases, they had people parked in front of their house. So many people are affected. But by the same token, I can't tell you how many people I don't know that have reached out and said, expressed just their, you know, I mean, they truly are feeling sad, too. They didn't know them, but they're feeling sad. And
right.
there are some, the underbelly, I don't know that I've ever been so close to the underbelly of unpleasantness
uh-huh.
with some of the people that we've talked about today, but there's also, you know, the plus side. You know, Katana's completely correct. I had the opportunity, I mean, the Rusek's, amazing, amazing people. He is like not on death row because Sandy doesn't believe in making that decision about a human being.
Uh-huh.
The district attorney, I mean, truly a wonderful guy, and he cared about this case and he cared about the victims. Law enforcement did a terrific job.
And I just want to encourage everybody, before you dive in and start judging people,
yes,
remember that there are people who care about them on the other end. And
exactly.
But it's a wonderful thing to be able to share in this way, and I can't even imagine having gone through this without the benefit of having information at my fingertips and people that I could, you know, bounce thoughts off with and vent. So I just want to thank you for making that available to me, because I know it made a hard time easier.
Oh, I'm glad. Anything we can do at Web Sleuths to help, that's why we're there. Well, Colorado 303, we will see you on the forum again, because we have thousands of other cases that could use a really smart person like you jumping in. So we'll be in touch soon, okay?
Okay.
Take care. Give our best to Nicole, okay?
I will. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Well, there you have it, everybody. I kind of think this might be the last podcast about the Watts murders, the family annihilator, I think. I could be wrong. I might be doing another one in 48 hours. Who knows? But what I find very touching, and it's what pretty much Colorado said, and that there are so many people that care. Didn't know Shanann, didn't know anybody, but they care enough to come on and try and help. And then there's those people who sit behind their computer and judge. Let me tell you, it never ends up well when you are too judgmental, because I swear to God, the universe says, oh, really? Boom. And then you get hit with something that you're complaining about. It happens constantly. So do remember, I don't know how many times I've said this, but kids, I'll say it again. Your words have power. They have lots of power. Just imagine you going on the internet and talking about you. You're a whore. Your heart would just fall out. You would be devastated. This is someone you don't even know. It's one thing to say, oh, just let it roll off your back. So easy to say. And you could even pretend that you let it roll off your back, but it hurts. So please understand, you have a lot of power right there on your keyboard. Use it for good and not for evil, and not to bring people down, because until you walk a mile in their shoes, you got to give them a little bit of a break. However, of course, we all draw lines, and you know, when somebody murders their family, that doesn't mean you have to say anything nice about them, that's for sure. So anyway, just remember, your words have power. People make mistakes, and hopefully it won't be you all over the internet one day. Okay, everybody, we'll see you at websleuths.com. Thank you so much, and we'll see you next time on Web Sleuths Radio. Bye-bye.